Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. Stories of the Hearth features true stories told live from folks in Southern Oregon. Here's Christy Laschober in the fall of 2019. The theme that night was rites of passage.
Wow. Hi. What would you go through to be completely free? About 6 years ago, I was sitting on an airplane and I had the window seat. And I look to my right out the window and I see the Las Vegas Strip. And it's beautiful. It's about 7 a.m. and the sun's coming up and the rays of the sun are bouncing off the sides of the hotels. And I start to see the Bellagio fountains fade off in the distance. And then I cried. And I couldn't wipe my tears because my hands were handcuffed. And I had shackles around my waist and shackles around my legs, and they were all together in a black box right at my waist. So I took my shoulder and I kind of got the big drops from falling. And then I thought, how did I get here? I'm a wardrobe stylist from Orange County, and now I'm shackled on Con Air. This is crazy. I take a deep breath and I look straight forward and a marshal is staring right at me. He's sitting backwards in his seat looking at me and all the people behind us. And I ask him, can you tell me where we're going? He says, no. And I said, can you at least tell me how long we're going to be in the airplane? And he said, I can't tell you that. So I take a deep breath and I think I fell asleep because a little while later, I woke up feeling like the plane was getting ready to land. And I look out the window and it's white out. It's just pure white outside. And the marshals get up and they put on their heavy gear and they put on a face mask. And you could just see the whites of their eyes. And I was afraid because I just had on a short sleeve camouflage t-shirt. And I thought, oh, it's going to be freezing. And they give orders to all of us. And they say, we're going to start from the back of the plane. And each of you are going to get up and we'll tell you who's going to get up. Don't talk to anybody. Don't look to your right. Don't look to your left. Just keep moving forward. So they open the door and the whoosh of the cold and the snow come rushing through. And I'm looking at them, waiting for them to give me some gear, but they didn't. And then I start to hear the shackles from all the men that were leaving from the back of the plane passing me. And I look at Bonnie, who's sitting next to me, and the officer says to her, Belle, get up. And I thought, I didn't know that was her last name. And I thought, Bonnie Belle, I used to love that lip gloss. Strawberry Bonnie Belle was my favorite. And how odd that I'm sitting next to Bonnie Belle, who is going to be doing 12 years for murder. So she gets up, and I follow Bonnie Belle out of the airplane. And we go down, and I'm freezing, and we're shackled, trying not to fall in the snow. And all the men are to the right, and all the women are to the left. And one by one, they start calling different names to go to the different vans. And a gentleman said, can I give her my coat? And I thought that was so nice, but the officer said no. So each person got to a van. And I'm standing there left alone. I'm thinking, am I being punished? What's going on? And finally, they call my name, Laschober. So I make my way over to one of the vans, and Bonnie Belle scooted over, and I got in next to her, and she rubbed her arm on my arm to keep me warm. That made me cry, and I was trying so hard to be strong. They close the door, and we start down the freeway somewhere, and I look out again, trying to find out where I am. I'm thinking, if I see the license plate, I can see what state I'm in. And I started seeing New Jersey. And they had the music blaring so loud, so we couldn't really talk in there. But I heard a girl say, I think we were in Newark Airport, Newark Airport. And I knew I'd heard of that before. I'm from Southern California. I didn't know. I've never been to Newark Airport. And finally, someone said, I think I'm sentenced to Danbury. And so, sure enough, that's where we ended up in Danbury, and we went through several fences, several barbed wire fences that they would buzz us through, and we ended in the back of this big facility. And one by one, we got out, and they stripped us out. We had our khakis and the white bra and white big granny panties, and then I got a coat. I was so happy for that coat. so much joy in a weird place. I have this deep joy in Danbury for a split second. And so my senses were all crazy, all over the place. And then they called each person one by one. And I realized these people were going to the home that they were going to be in for their next 19 years, 21 years, 12 years. And when Bonnie was called last, I thought maybe she would turn around and look at me. We weren't friends, but I thought I had made a connection with her, and she didn't. And she kept walking, and finally I was the last one again sitting there, and the officer came up to me and said, Lashover, the prison, the pretrial prison in Rhode Island forgot to get you, so you're going to have to stay here tonight. And I said, okay. And he said, now, because you're not supposed to be here, you're going to have to be in the SHU, which I learned was solitary confinement. So I begged him, can you please let me just sit on this bench? I'll just stay here with you. And he said he couldn't do that. So I took a deep breath, trying to be strong. They shackled me back up, and we walked outside. And the snow had stopped. It was dark, and the whole compound was filled with a blanket of snow. It was really pretty. And I kept thinking, this is like a movie. I'm going through this like a movie, and what is happening? And to back up, I forgot to mention, when I had said that I wasn't sure how I got here, I knew how I got there. I was a child in the hospital a lot, and I got a lot of Demerol, and I loved it. And I loved the gentleman talked before about avoiding emotions. Demerol helped me avoid emotions. It helped me avoid anything that wasn't just happy and nice and good. And so I learned how to do life through that. I finally got sober, and I relapsed, and I had so much shame, I never talked about it to anybody. And because I was stoic, as you were saying too, that I never shared anything. And I just kept going deeper and deeper in shame. And I did drugs, and I sold drugs to somebody, and I got caught. That's how I ended up on Con Air. Now I'm in solitary confinement. And so they stripped me out into an orange jumpsuit, and we're walking through, and they opened the door, and the smell was pungent. It was smelled like feces and throw up, and the screams and the noise was so loud. It felt like a human zoo or something. And I'm starting to crack, but I kept walking. And the guy looks at me, the officer, and he said, I promise you're going to be okay. I'll come get you as soon as I can in the morning. So I walk through, and on the right side, there is just a wall of cement. And on the left side is rows and rows of cells. There was three levels. And I was praying the whole time, just put me in a cell where there nobody's at. Because all the screams, I wasn't sure what was going on. And so there was a gal, she had a real tight bun. She didn't speak. She had tons of keys on her waist. And she escorted me through and then stopped at a cell that was empty. I was so grateful there was a cell that was empty. And I look and I see the stainless steel sink and the stainless steel toilet that you see in the movies. It really looks like that. And she stops and motions for me to go through, and I did. And then she slams the door shut, and that's when I cracked. And I started crying, and I couldn't stop. And I'm thinking, what is going on? How am I going to survive this? I lay on the bed, and I'm just crying. And I'm hearing all the screaming, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to survive this. But I did survive this. I got sentenced to 5 years. And I did, I was in prisons in Texas, Rhode Island, Las Vegas, Connecticut, Oklahoma. I stayed sober. I worked really hard on myself. I even went back to college when I got out. In fact, just last March, I was on spring break, and I was in New York. And this is the first time I had ever been back east since that time. So it was a little surreal. I'm one of the most grateful people you will ever meet in your life. I will guarantee you that. So I'm sightseeing, and I'm on top of the One World Trade Center, and there's an area where you can go and buy and rent an iPad, and that shows you all the landscape. And you can hold this iPad up, and you're looking around, and you see all the different monuments. And I see Ellis Island, and I see Statue of Liberty, and then I see Newark Airport, and I shake, and I sit down, and I start crying.
And I sit on the bench and my knees are shaking. And I take a deep breath and I have to talk to myself. Christy, you were warm. I had on a black puffer jacket that was so warm with a faux fur collar. I look at my hands and I rub them. I'm not in handcuffs. I'm totally safe and I am warm. And I think, wow, I made it. That's what's who I would never think my rite of passage would be prison. I would never choose that. If you asked me if I wanted to go through that again, even though I'm completely free now, I don't know that I would say yes to that yet. But during those 1,500 days, I was able to work on myself. I was able to look at my grief. I was able to look at my shame. I didn't have to people please. Nobody needed anything from me. I could be who Christy was, and I had to figure out who that was. And I got to know her in a horrific pain and struggle and tears, but come out the other side. And now here I am at SOU and with my family. And I just feel so grateful that that was my rite of passage. Thank you.
We recently spoke to Christy about her Hearth story and what she's up to now.
Just reflecting a bit, since that story was in 2019, talk a little bit about how you felt when you were telling it and if there was any kind of immediate response.
It was really the first time I ever spoke in front of that many people. And right before I went up, I was like, oh, shoot, why did I say yes? Look at all these people. You know, I started getting so much doubt, and my family was actually in the audience, too. And so finally, I just went up and spoke, and the response was so beautiful. And I just felt kind of like in the zone, and I was just speaking from my heart, really. And so it was great at the end. The applause was great, and it kind of helped me know that it's okay to tell your story and to live in your truth and your vulnerability, because that's where truth and that's where we connect to others. There was a lady that came up to me afterward and she's like, oh, you described that so well. I was in jail a few times too, but nobody knows. And I thought that was really cute. So yeah, it just helped me understand and know for sure that that's where my path was going to go.
Could you talk a little bit about what you're doing now? What are you up to these days?
Well, I moved to New Orleans about 2 years ago. So I went from Ashland, which is really a healing town, to New Orleans, which is like distractions on every corner, which is really beautiful and a celebratory place. I finished college at SOU since then, and I graduated with a Bachelor of Innovation and Leadership. I worked for an organization here in New Orleans that does reentry work, and I work in advocacy. I go to the state capitol here. I go to Washington, D.C., speak about my experience in Oregon. Since I spoke, I got a bill passed, which it was to remove the criminal history box from all college applications in Oregon, so that they don't have to say if they've ever had a felony, at least to be admitted. And then after that, you know, whatever they need to ask for, you know, the college themselves. But that just helps others continue on to school that have had a conviction. And right now, I recently just wrote a book. It got published a year ago. It's called Perfectly Flawed. And it kind of chronicles bits of my story as I'm reflecting about why I ended up where I did and why did I make some of the choices that I did. And it's at the end of every chapter, I ask the reader questions about their own lives so that they can kind of delve into their truth, into their story, and really see all the beauty and, you know, their perceived dark sides and light sides of themselves and really love who they are. And so I'm really excited about that book, and I'm in the process of writing another one right now.
You can find a link to Christy's book and more on our website at jeffexchange.org. That's it for today's JX segment. You can subscribe to our shows wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Angela Decker. Andrew Crackle is engineering our show today, and our theme music is composed by Maxwell and Terry Longshore. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great weekend.